Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Hello and welcome to the FT's U.S. Election Countdown podcast. I'm Kara Scannell in New York, and I'm joined on the line by Courtney Weaver and Sean Donnan in D.C. Hi, Courtney. Hi, Sean. How are you guys?
Hi. Hi, Kara.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
So this week was pretty dramatic here in the U.S. The country was rocked by a mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando on the weekend, and the attacker had pledged allegiance to ISIS shortly before committing the crime. Terror has become the central point of the U.S. election this week. And Courtney, maybe you could catch us up about how both Clinton and the Trump camps responded to the shooting. And maybe you can also dive into then Obama's speech on Tuesday.
Yeah. It's been really interesting to watch how all three actors, Clinton, Obama, and Trump, have all reacted. So starting with Trump on Sunday, right after the attack, Trump said a tweet along the lines of, "I appreciate your congrats on being right about Islamic terrorism in the U.S., which, you know, some people thought was not the right tone immediately after close to 50 people had just died in this attack. And then following that, he made some comments on a Monday News Morning show suggesting that Obama somehow sympathized with the terrorist or wasn't on the side of Americans and American safety. And so on Monday, basically, you had a speech both by Trump and by Clinton. So Clinton, in her speech, was saying this is not the time for politics and took this very somber tone. And on speeches on Tuesday and Wednesday, she's really called Trump out and basically saying, you know, she's been making this point even before the attacks happened, but that he is not prepared to be commander in chief. He doesn't have the temperament to be president. And Trump, he was back on Wednesday calling her Crooked Hillary, which is his favorite nickname for her, making more attacks on Obama. So you really have these portraits of these very two different candidates who have completely different styles. And it's being reflected in how people see the two candidates. You know, they're not both Clinton and Trump, as we know, have very high disapproval ratings. But we've really seen this divergence in the polls this week in how people look at Trump. And this is reflected by people in his own party who now seem to have serious doubts about him.
Well, that was one of the things in Obama's speech. He kind of put it on national television to the Republican Party saying, is this really how you think, especially when Trump kind of doubles down on his, call to ban or temporary ban on allowing Muslims into the country. And we saw House Speaker Paul Ryan, you know, kind of come out and show a division there and show that that's not what he believes the Republican Party stands for.
Right, exactly. And Sean actually has been looking at some of the poll numbers, which I think tells a lot about how people in the U.S., view some of the remarks that Trump is making.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting thing that we saw after this event in terms of polling and in terms of the politics. Both of them were very clearly speaking to their bases after the event. Hillary Clinton talking about the need for stricter gun laws, which is a very popular subject with Democrats, and Donald Trump talking about the need for a crackdown on terrorists, a hard response on ISIS, also this ban on Muslims that he's been pushing through the Republican primaries. The problem is for Donald Trump is that he's speaking to what the polls show to be a narrower and narrower constituency, while Hillary Clinton is managing to broaden out the voters that she appeals to. And that's what we started seeing really in the polls here. And that's the big fear of the Republican leadership and the Republican mainstream about Donald Trump, is that can he pivot, as they say, and talk to a general election audience, or is he stuck with that core support that he's had through the primaries?
Courtney, can you break down for us what we've learned from the polls that came out this week?
Yeah, so basically there are three very interesting polls, and they basically all say the same thing, which is that Donald Trump appears to be losing support among the electorate. So one poll is from the Washington Post and ABC News. According to that poll, 70% of Americans now have negative views of Trump, which is his highest disapproval rating since he began his presidential campaign. And then the separate poll is from Bloomberg News, which found that Clinton now has a 12-point lead against Trump nationally, and that's much higher than what we were seeing, you know, a few weeks ago. And then another poll is from CBS, and that found that just 31% of those surveys of the U.S., that the U.S. should ban Muslims as Mr. Trump from entering the country, as Trump is suggesting. So basically, I mean, I think what's really interesting to point out is if you look back to the Paris attacks in November, you know, people thought that this would be a moment where Trump, who was then the Republican frontrunner, would lose the support, that people would think, oh, we don't want someone like Trump to be leading our country at a time of a terrorist attack. And what we saw was the opposite, right? That his poll numbers actually jumped after the Paris attack. And then after this attack, you're actually seeing the opposite, which I think is really interesting. So, you know, you could say it's something about the specific nature of the attack, you know, the fact that this wasn't an outside plot, that this was an American citizen, and that there seemed to be some other issues involved. But I think in general, you're seeing a cooling towards Trump, both in the Republican Party and among the electorate more broadly.
What the shooting also brought very much to the attention was that it's the third time in recent months that we've seen, you know, someone who's American become self-radicalized by propaganda from ISIS and other terrorist groups. And the investigation into this shooter is still in the early stages, but it really has revived a question about why someone who was once on the FBI's terrorist watch list was able to purchase, you know, a semi-automatic weapon and handguns and then use them just a few days later. So I'm curious, what are we learning about Americans' views towards gun control in wake of this tragedy?
So one of the really interesting things we see, and we've seen this through recent history in the U.S., is after you have a mass shooting like this, you have a real surge in support for stricter gun laws. But and then it tends to kind of peter out. And then as the NRA, the National Rifle Association, and other members of the gun lobby get to work and block things politically, these things tend to go nowhere fast. And the question after a mass shooting like this is always, is there going to be something different this time around? But what we are seeing is over time, Americans are getting more and more fed up, and the polls show that they are increasingly in favor of stricter gun laws. So you now have something like 55% of Americans who favor stricter gun laws in the U.S. A huge support for stricter background checks, something like 90% of Americans, and 92% of Republicans, according to the CBS poll that we had out on Wednesday, support stricter background checks, even 82% of gun owners favoring stricter background checks. But one of the big litmus test questions is whether you favor a ban on assault weapons. Now, Bill Clinton in 1994 introduced a ban on assault weapons like the one that was used in the Orlando nightclub shooting, but that expired in 2004. And since then, Democrats have pushed to reinstate that, but have always been blocked either in Congress or by Republican presidents. Well, after the shooting, the CBS poll that came out this week showed 57% of Americans now support a nationwide ban on assault weapons. Still a big partisan divide there. Republicans, only 45% support a ban, whereas 78% of Democrats support a ban. But really, we're moving in that general direction. We're also seeing just a few months ago, President Obama had proposed banning gun sales to people who were on this terrorist watch list that you mentioned, and that was voted down and was blocked in Congress. Well, now it looks like that may have a chance of passing, and Republicans are pretty embarrassed about that vote right now, and we're starting to see people like Donald Trump even say, well, maybe we should ban people on terrorist watch lists from buying guns. So once again, we've got this rekindled debate. It's going to take some time to see really how this plays out, whether anything really concrete happens here. But what's interesting also in the context of the presidential election is all of a sudden gun control is front and center. And also Hillary Clinton is not afraid to talk about this in public and to push a pretty strong gun control line, which is something that previous Democratic candidates haven't been willing to do. So it's in the conversation here, and it's something that we should be watching through November.
And how does Hillary Clinton's position on gun control, how far from what Republicans may be willing to accept is she? Is there an element of it that could get both sides to? Is there something that both sides could agree on?
No, I think the real thing that people can agree on in the short term, and we may see some action on before the end of the year, is this question of the terrorist watch list. I mean, Hillary Clinton makes the point that you can't get onto a plane now with a bottle of shampoo. We won't let people on terrorist watch lists get onto a plane, but they can go into their local gun store and they can buy an assault rifle, and that seems slightly nuts. So I think we may see something around that. And there is some sign. Donald Trump has said he wants to meet with the NRA to discuss this. The NRA said it's willing to discuss this. There have been some signs in the past that they're willing to bend a little bit on this. So we may see some movement there. But I think there is an appetite in the U.S., as there often is after these shootings, to go further than that. And that's really something that that will only become possible after the election.
I mean, it's been very striking how we've seen not just terrorist-related shootings, but just mass shootings of any kind. There being this conversation, and then things seem to peter away, or Congress hits gridlock, and we don't see much in terms of momentum. Is there any legislation now that it could be amended onto and possibly have a chance of getting through?
So as we speak, Senator Chris Murphy, who's from Connecticut, which was where the Newtown, this horrible attack on a school happened a few years ago, is on the floor of the Senate and is trying to filibuster until amendments get attached to existing bills. And that's something the Democrats are going to be doing over and over again. In the House on Monday, after Paul Ryan, the Speaker, called for a moment of silence in honor of the victims in Orlando, as soon as the silence broke, the immediate reaction for Democrats was to scream out or to yell out, "We want the bill. Where's the bill? You know, where's the action here?" And we should expect a lot more of that. In terms of specific legislation, look, gun control legislation has been floating around. Proposed gun control legislation has been floating around in Congress for years, and they can very quickly revive some of that and push it through. It's not because bills have not been written.
Right. I mean, I think another thing that's important to note is just how important this is to President Obama. I mean, this is such a sticking point for his presidency. And you could tell when he was speaking this week, especially in his speech on Tuesday, you know, just the pure frustration and anger that, you know, this was something we heard him speak about it last year, you know, when he was speaking about the Sandy Hook shooting, when, you know, all these elementary school kids were killed. And I mean, it's clearly an issue that he feels very emotionally about, very passionately about, and is incredibly frustrated that he can't enact any change. You know, and I was at the White House on Monday, you know, watching him in the Oval Office, and you can see it on his face, you know, and his speech on Tuesday was, I would think, definitely, you know, he has this reputation for being no drama Obama and, you know, very kind of cool and calm. But this is one of the issues where you really can see him get emotional about it. So I think if he has anything to do with it, you know, he wants to see this enacted during his presidency. He wants this to be part of his legacy.
Well, at least with three different leaders, both Obama and then the two candidates, saying that something should change, I guess we'll have to wait and see if anything does. I think we're going to have to wrap it up. That's it for us this week. Thanks for listening. You can find us all on Twitter. Courtney's handle is @Courtney_FT. Sean can be followed at @SDonnan, and I'm @Kara Scannell. You can also sign up for our daily campaign trail newsletter, White House Countdown, at ft.com/NBE. That stands for news by email. Again, ft.com/NBE. And be sure to download FT Politics wherever you get your podcasts, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Acast. This podcast was produced and edited by Amy Keene.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.